As we continue moving closer to the end of the church's year, next week is Christ the King Sunday, and that's the last Sunday of our liturgical year. The church starts looking towards the end times in the readings. We heard in Malachi today that the proud and the evildoers will be as stubble in an oven and utterly destroyed. But for those who fear the Lord, he will protect us. In the psalm today, the people of Israel cry out with joy because the Lord has come to rule the world with justice. And the Thessalonians, Paul says, are not busy doing the work of God, but instead have become busybodies. And then in the gospel, Christ prophesies the destruction of Jerusalem and of its temple and the coming persecution of Christians. The end of days, Christ teaches, will not be pleasant on this earth for the Christians. And while this prophecy has been fulfilled once in 70 AD, it continues to be fulfilled as we enter in to those end times. The end times because Christ has come and we wait for him to come again. Christ tells us that we will be hated and persecuted because of his name, but that our perseverance will save our lives, and that not a hair on your head will be destroyed. Now, while that doesn't bother me too much if they're destroyed because they're already gone, some people do care about that. But he can't be speaking literally if he's telling us we shall be persecuted and put to death. What he means is though, even though we might suffer now, we will be saved at the end of time, and our glorified bodies will rise again. The message of the readings today is clear. Christians need to get their act together and get to the work of saving souls, because we do not know when the Lord is coming, and we need to be ready for that moment. Over these last few weeks of renewal, we've discussed that we were created out of love, that we humans got ourselves into this hopeless quagmire of sin and death, and that God finally sent his only begotten Son to rescue us. And when we finally start to grasp that big picture and see how it works in our own lives, our hearts desire to make some sort of response to that work of God. When we begin to comprehend God's work in our lives, our heart doesn't just respond, it forces us to cry out in thanksgiving and praise and worship and ultimately in surrender to the one who loves us more than we can ever hope of loving ourselves. The most amazing thing about that love of God that he wants to give us every moment is that we also cannot keep it to ourselves. Because when I recognize how God has saved me, when I know the story of how I have been saved, I'm unable to stop talking about it. You'll notice that a lot of my homilies go back to the same few stories. It's because those are important stories for me, and I need to share them. I have to spread the love that God has brought into my life. And no matter what it takes to get there, some of us had to go through hell to find where that love was. No matter what it is, we have to share it. Because that's just what God's love does when we receive it in our hearts. And Jesus Christ, in those last moments before his ascension, he gave his apostles and his disciples, he gave them a mission, what to do with that love. Go and make disciples. That is, bring others into my friendship and into my love, he tells them. And so we do this mission as well. We are called to this mission as well. We begin with those people with whom we have relationships, our families, our friends, even our coworkers. And with them, what do we share? We share our story. We share how much we know that we are loved by Jesus Christ who came to save us. And we acknowledge that God has the answer to all of our problems, even if we can't see it right now. This mission that we are all on also means that we can't be afraid to publicly live our faith, to not worry about giving that testimony and preparing before, to allow the love of Christ in our hearts, to care for the sick and the poor. Believe it or not, before the Christians started doing these things, nobody did that. We do this by recognizing the dignity of every human person. Again, before the Christians came onto the scene, women were for having babies and children were for whatever you wanted to do with them, including expose them if they were inconvenient. And so as Christians, this is part of who we are. We must never stop forcing the world to look and see that each and every one of us is created in the image and likeness of God, and that the difference between men and women is not something bad, but something beautiful, because it shows us that in our very being, we're meant to be in relationship with one another. We live this mission and our faith by showing unity to the world. As Christians, we're all the same before God. And you saw that when Peter and Paul would talk to anyone, Jew or Gentile, shocking and scandalizing the Jews of the day. Even the Gentiles of the day would have been surprised by that. But by far, the most challenging way we live our faith is forgiveness and living it. Because we've been called to love our enemies. And the Our Father, which every single Christian knows, we pray, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Those are scary words, because forgiveness is not optional for Christians. Someone who holds grudges, who refuses to even try to forgive, who's not open to forgiveness because, Father, that's for someone else, not me. Those people are putting their souls in great danger and possibly eternal suffering and damnation if they do that, because it is so clear in the Gospels what we are called to do. We look at St. Stephen, the first martyr. He forgave Saul as he was being stoned to death. And he prayed for those men who were murdering him because of his belief in Jesus Christ. And Saul surely heard this. He received a forgiveness he could not understand. And he must have been shaken, because it was not long after this when Saul had a vision and received a new name of Paul and became one of the greatest missionaries in Christian history and a saint. Forgiveness changes lives. It has unbelievable power. As we hear the story of our faith and we allow it to move our heart to respond with gratitude through worship and prayer and praise and thanksgiving to the gifts that we have been given by a God who loves us, we allow ourselves to surrender our hearts to Him. And in doing so, that will give us the courage to go out and share this good news with everybody. And we don't need to worry about it. As Christ says in the gospel, He will tell us what to say. He will show us how to preach that gospel. And that gospel message, it is powerful. And if you think you can't make an impact by yourself, consider this. When Christ ascended into heaven and sent His apostles out on a mission to convert the entire world, that's what He told them. There were 11 bishops who also happened to be the priests. They had no deacons, no theology majors, no religious orders, no seminarians or seminaries. They had a few hundred Christians in the whole entire world. They had no experience doing this because nobody evangelized ever. They had no friends in high places. They didn't have a church. They didn't have a school. And these guys, they didn't even have a written gospel to work with. And yet they went out and they shared the good news to a society that at best was ignorant and at worst was hostile to them. but their message has power. Jesus Christ has saved us. The job we are called to do today and every day is the job that St. Paul was reminding those Thessalonians to do. Our job is to help God get his world back and to save it from the devil. And we Christians have nothing to fear because we have the power of the gospel on our side. So, brothers and sisters, go forth and do not be afraid, because God is with you. We have been born for this exact moment in time. So let us strive to get God's world back for him.